Welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood, episode 79. We have a lot of things to talk about this week, you guys. There's been so much happening around here. I can't wait to share it with you. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsor. Motherhood in Hollywood is sponsored by Olin Organic. Go to olinorganic.com to find out more about these stylish and modern clothes for your kids. Everything they use at Olin Organic is made of 100% certified organic cotton, which is way better for your baby and the environment. That means all the fabrics are free of bleach, silicone, formaldehyde, plastic inks, and chemical flame retardants. And of course, those are mostly found in traditional baby clothes. So that's why Olin Organic has created this wonderful line of clothes. And you guys, I have a few of them here, a few of the pieces here for Channing. And I can tell you, they're so soft and they're so beautiful. And you have to go right now to olinorganic.com and check out these clothes for your babies. And make sure while you're there to enter the code MIH10 when you go to the checkout, and you'll get 10% off your order. Olinorganic.com. Safer, softer, better clothes.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a Crude Prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hi, I'm so glad you guys are joining me for this episode. It is a really special time right now around the Motherhood in Hollywood studios, aka my office and my house. First of all, I want to begin by telling you who my guest is today. My guest is my good friend Olivia Pearson, who I've known for many years because we used to work together as tour guides at Universal Studios Hollywood. And she recently became a mom. But before that happened, about a year ago, I held a fundraiser for an organization called No Kid Hungry, which provides meals to hungry children in the United States. I held a fundraiser, and for that fundraiser, we did a live taping of my podcast, and we did a raffle. And one of the raffle prizes was for whoever won it. I'm so arrogant. This is how arrogant I am. One of the prizes was you got to be a guest on my podcast. And I'm sure if people had known that was the raffle prize, they probably would not have donated so much or bought so many raffle tickets. But regardless, Olivia did, and her husband did. Her husband's name is Kit, and they won. So Olivia said, well, I want to come on your show, but I'd like to wait till I'm actually a mom. Oh, and by the way, like, that's happening soon. So Olivia gave birth, I think it was in August, to her son, Christopher. And I couldn't wait to have her come on because she's very passionate about politics. She's very passionate about, she's just a kind person, like just being nice and lovely. And she has some really wonderful things to say about her experience as a new mom. I mean, her baby is just a few months old. So we're going to get into the nitty gritty of that, of new motherhood. Yay. Okay. So for those of you who have been keeping track at home, first of all, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I hope wherever you are and whatever you're doing, you had a wonderful holiday. We certainly did here, sort of by accident, because as you heard me mention maybe in the last episode, we had been planning for a while to give Channing a cat for Christmas. We'd gone to a couple of shelters, done a little bit of research to find out, you know, the cost and that sort of thing, just to make sure we were prepared. And we adopted this beautiful cat, and we decided we were going to, like, you know, put her in a little Christmas box, wrap it all up and have her open it. And we were going to have this beautiful Hallmark moment where she opens the box and the cat's there. And it's like, oh my gosh, a cat, and you know, whatnot. Well, that didn't happen exactly. Apparently, what did happen though was hilarious. You should go, if you haven't seen the video yet, which I put up on YouTube or on my website, motherhoodinhollywood.com, the cat actually slipped out of the box while Channing was opening it, and she didn't notice it. She didn't see it happen. So it looked like we gave her a big empty box, and she was a little disappointed until she saw the cat. And then it was like, oh, all the love, all the feels. And she's so excited. Anyway, this video that we shot, people seemed to really enjoy it. They got a kick out of it. They thought it was funny. I put it up on the YouTube, and it went viral. Within 2 days, it had had over 2 million views on YouTube and is still going. It's pushing almost 3 million now. The response has been overwhelming. Media outlets like Inside Edition, Fox, the local station here, KTLA, Huffington Post, Babbel, Mashable, you name it. Everybody covered this story and this video of Channing opening her basically empty Christmas gift and the little sneaky cat that had jumped out before she saw him, her, excuse me. So it's been a really crazy, exciting, and wonderful week, you guys. There's even more good things coming out of it. I have to say, when I first saw the video, I was cracking up laughing because I thought, of course this happens to me, because that's what I get for trying to plan something so perfect, you know, and so like, oh, I'm going to have this wonderful moment. I'm going to put it on my Instagram and people are going to go, oh, that's fun. But what ended up happening was way better and much more genuine, and really showed the true heart that my daughter has. She's such a sweet girl. And so yeah, if you haven't seen the video yet, please do. It's great. The big thing I want to tell you guys about that's come out of this video is, after all of this excitement took off for the video, we, Chris and I, were just overwhelmed by it all. And we talked about, we really wanted to give a portion of the money that we're making off of the video, because I monetized it on YouTube, so that we could make money, because hello, why not? Everybody else on YouTube does, so why shouldn't we, right? So I monetized the video and I realized I really wanted to give back some of the money that we were making to the foundation and to the shelter that we got, the rescue organization where we got Gracie. Gracie, I love you is our new cat's name. And the Santa Door Foundation here in Los Angeles is such a wonderful place. You know, they rescue cats and they have them, you know, there for adoption, and they all sort of roam free, and they're, it's this wonderful, we walked in and we were like, what a great place for all these cats. They seem so happy and lovely. And, you know, and I was immediately drawn to Gracie, which is how we came to be her new parents. But anyway, we decided we wanted to give back some of the money that we were raising for, or that we were getting for this video, to this foundation, to the Santa Door organization. And I called them to let them know that. And they were so gracious and so kind about it and really excited about the video and seemed to enjoy it as well. And apparently one of their major donors, a private donor, came forward and said that they would like to match our donation dollar for dollar, whatever we raise by the end of January, up to $10,000. Now, I can't even tell you how overwhelmingly generous that is. I thought, oh, well, you know, we'll just do this thing. Like, nobody will notice. Nobody will really, you know, pay attention or whatever, that we're just going to give this donation, a portion of this money that we're making from this video. And this generous donor has come forward and now said that they are going to match whatever we make on this video up to $10,000. Like, I can't even wrap my mind around that. That means that we could potentially, if everybody shares the video and we get the, you know, we get it out there, or anybody makes donations or whatever, we could potentially donate $20,000 to this shelter. Just think about that for a second. That is a tremendous amount of money to donate. And it's all because of this cute Christmas video that I just happened to post up on the YouTube, and that everybody so lovingly and generously shared and has such funny things to say about. So I'm overwhelmed. I am so excited. And I really, really hope that people donate and share the video and watch it a million more times, so that we can reach that $10,000 goal, so that this donor will match it and we can give the Santa Door Foundation $20,000. What? I know. I'm so overwhelmed. I'm not usually this nice, you guys. The word is getting out that I might actually be doing something nice. So tell your friends, spread the word that this is what is happening. And let's see if we can raise some money for this wonderful animal shelter that helps people find, help these pets find their forever families like we did, right? Sounds pretty good. I like it. For more information, go to my website, motherhoodinhollywood.com. I'm also going to have a video up on the YouTube explaining a little bit more about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And thank you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you for embracing this little video from the bottom of our hearts. We appreciate it so much. All right, I'm going to wrap up my mommy monologue and get right to my interview with my good friend, Olivia Pearson. We're talking about being a new mom and all of the fun stuff that comes along with that. Here is Olivia. So this is truly a treat for me today. My friend Olivia Pearson is here, and Olivia is here for a couple of reasons. One, she's a new mom.
Yay.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And also, like, I think it's been a year ago now.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, your sweet husband bid on, I did this charity event where I was trying to raise money for No Kid Hungry with a live podcast, and you were so sweet to come to the show. You and five people were like, you and the five other people that came were so nice to come, and you bid on silent auction stuff. And one of the things I put in the silent auction was to be a guest on my show.
Yes.
And was it you that wanted to bid on it, or was it Kit? Was he like, I want to do it?
I don't recall. I think it was, that was a raffle, right?
Or was
the,
it?
The
oh, it might have been.
I feel like that
yeah,
was
yeah,
the raffle.
Yeah, it was so a raffle to get that story. So really, neither one of you wanted it.
No, we just, I think we just kind of bid on everything.
And yeah, you were so sweet.
Great.
Yeah, you guys got away with some really good loot.
We did.
Yeah.
And I've used all of it.
So finally, a year later, I know, because like shortly after that, you guys got pregnant, and then things get crazy when you're pregnant and you have like go into nesting mode. But now I'm finally happy that we can say we can make good on what your winnings, I guess.
Yeah.
From
I feel
the
like
charity.
The timing is perfect because, yes. Yeah, when my husband won the guest
raffle
spot on your show,
yeah.
I wasn't even pregnant. So
right.
Like neither of us had a lot to talk about motherhood.
We were like, what are we going
to
do?
So, yeah, now the timing is great. Wait, our baby, it's today Tuesday?
Yeah.
He's 4 months old today.
Aw, that's so exciting. Yeah. And how has it been so far? Is it a little eye-opening, or was it what you expected?
You know, I used to work as a nanny. So in part because I wanted to have kids, and I thought, what can I do career-wise that's sort of like having kids? And so I had some experience with babies, but this has been... I guess the parts that are the most eye-opening for me is like how much conflicting information comes at you.
Oh.
And so, for example, like we'll have people say, oh, you should sleep with your baby in your bed. And some people will say, you should never sleep with your baby in your bed.
That's,
you know, things
true.
Like that, where you just get this, like, everyone, it's not just like a small variance. It's just like a complete spectrum of information.
Of information. Yeah, that's true. I think it's because everybody's parents differently, and everybody, you know, it's like if five people see a car crash, you're going to hear five different stories of how it happened, because everybody's, you know, opinions are formed differently on what they think is right. I wasn't ever a co-sleeper fan.
Yeah.
I'm not judging anybody who co-sleeps. Good for you. But I'm just saying that was not something I wanted to do.
If I knew it was completely safe, I would absolutely do it, because it's so easy to, mm-hmm. And it would be so nice to kind of snuggle with him. But I'm somebody who, I'm very into the science of parenting.
Yeah.
So I'll look up whatever is like the absolute safest, latest, you know. So I have him in like the bedside bassinet, in his little sleep sack. I mean, everything is like anything I can do to
yeah.
make it, you know, the utmost.
I love that too, because I used to read a lot. I have a feeling you probably read a lot too.
Yeah. I mean, all I get to read right now is anything that's on my iPhone, you know, while I'm breastfeeding. But but that
like
helps.
motherhoodinhollywood.com.
Exactly. Every day religiously.
Every day religiously.
So yeah, that's, I'm really into research, I guess. And
yeah.
That's where I feel like I get a foothold in parenting, besides the sort of heart-centered aspect of it, is mm-hmm. like, what can I learn to kind of optimize?
Yeah. Do you think that there is a pressure to be perfect? Do you think that that's why you do so much of that, or you are have more of an analytical take on it?
No, I think it's just a way to assuage my anxieties.
Oh, yeah, so that's true. That's true.
Perfection part, I really don't care about. Mm. Like our house has been, you know, it's now kind of getting cleaned up, but it's like it was hard to have visitors at first. They had to be real inner circle,
right,
to come, because our place was just such a mess for the first few months. But I think, yeah, for me, the research just allows me, because it's so scary,
yeah.
You know, to have this tiny, tiny
person
human.
That you're responsible for keeping alive forever. Yeah.
So it's like anything I can learn to help keep them alive for me is helps.
Right. So what's been the most like surprising part, or I guess the thing that you found the most valuable to learn so far as a mom? Besides the conflicting information that you see.
Yeah, that was the most surprising part for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think what I'll speak for my husband a little bit here, but for both of us, we really, I think, have just been soaking up the joy of it. And what I mean is, like, before we became parents, you know, I was worried about, like, we had a birthing class and we were sitting in the class and some of the students who had already had their babies came back and they talked about, you know, diaper explosions and stuff like that. I was like, oh my God, I'd forgotten about poop.
Poop.
I'd completely, like, I was like worried about the birth. I was thinking about not sleeping, but I was like, oh, I didn't think about
the shit. Yeah.
And so, but then what we both found, my husband and I both found when the baby was born, like, we don't care at all.
You don't care.
It is so, we change his diapers like 1,000 times a day and it is it's a joy.
Yeah.
I'm sure that will deteriorate, you know, as he's like 2.5 yeah. And his poops smell
when
horrible.
When Channing turned 3, we were like, all right, we got to get out of these diapers right. Because yeah. It's like human sized poops now.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's getting real gross. Yeah. It's no longer cute little baby poops.
That's the thing. You know? He's still in the little.
You don't hear. And you always see these videos of parents, like wacky videos like, oh, I changed my kid's diaper. It was so gross. My baby's diaper. But you never hear when they're like my 3-year old, you know. No one's ever doing their 3-year-old diapers. It's so gross.
Horror show. Yeah.
Yeah, but you do sort of go into the mode where it's just what you do. Like,
yeah.
It's just sort of becomes like a reflex. Like, now we change this gross diaper as quickly as possible, and
well,
then we move on.
And also just the level of initial sleep deprivation was so profound that I'm like, oh, only somebody who is literally in love and falling in love, you know, with the object of, with the child, mm-hmm. could stand this.
Yeah.
Because it's beyond anything, you know. So that was a surprise to the reserves that you have.
I will say that I never would think that I would admit how much I love my mom after becoming a mom. There's truly something to that where you say, oh my God, my parents must have really loved me to put up with this for so long and so intensely. And my mom was a single mom.
Wow.
So she did it all by herself and she worked. My grandma helped too. But I just look back and think, how'd she do that? How did she do that?
We've been really lucky because both of our moms and our families in general have been helping out a ton.
So great.
And my mom has come and stayed with us sometimes overnight because she lives in, but down by the beach. And so it's been so amazing. And one of the things she told me is that myself and my 2 siblings all had colic. Meaning we all screamed for minimum of 3 hours a day for 3 months straight every day.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, that is just unfathomable because, you know, our baby cries for 15 minutes and I'm like,
and you're shaking.
Oh, I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, wow, you're incredible to do that.
It is really incredible to, because then you suddenly have a newfound respect for the people who've gone before you, the moms who've gone before you. You're like, oh, good for you, lady. And especially your own parent. My mom always is like, no, you were great. I don't remember anything, you know. You were wonderful. And she always tried to like sugarcoat it. And I'm like, Mom, you don't have to do that anymore. Like,
there's got to be some name for the like syndrome that she remembers things.
Yeah, she remembers things through rose-colored glasses. No, it was the best time. And I'm like, there's no way it was that great.
It's like human preservation.
Right.
That's how we keep procreating.
So right.
That didn't hurt. That was
fine. I have very vivid memories of my C-section hurting. Oh, so, so, so bad. And that has honestly been one of the reasons why I'm like, I don't know if I want to go through that again. It was really terrible.
That was another thing I will say that surprised me was everybody says, you know, oh, you forget how much it hurts and then you're ready to do it again.
No.
I did.
Like, you forgot?
Yeah. I was, from the time my water broke till the time I had the baby, I think it was like 42 or 43 hours.
Ooh.
I was pushing. I had a vaginal birth. I was pushing for like 3.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, you know, not easy or fun. But then literally like a day or two later or a week later, I was like, oh shit, I could do this all over again.
I think it's different with vaginal births.
Mm.
And I think that's why so many women want to have, you know, or like try to push for a vaginal birth, because the healing process and the downtime is much less. It's still painful. I don't want to downplay that at all. But for a C-section because they're like ripping apart your abdominal yeah. wall. You physically cannot walk for like a few days after you have your baby. And nobody ever really talks about that, how you're essentially bedridden. And if you don't have help or somebody there to help bring you your baby to breastfeed or, you know, and that may be too why some women start co-sleeping is because they can't move. So they just keep their baby there with
them.
That
was actually one of my bigger motivations for avoiding a C-section is I'd heard the recovery can be really intense. And I will say another surprise, I really wish somebody had talked to me about the sort of deep, dark, scatological aspects of recovering from childbirth.
Because, yeah.
Like, pooping for one thing.
Oh, yeah.
After vaginal birth has been an epic adventure.
Pooping has been a big adventure.
Oh, my God. It has been an Olympic. It is more painful than childbirth.
Oh,
at times.
God.
I mean, it is brutal. It's just
still? Do you need to go to your doctor?
All right.
Olivia's like, wait a minute.
No, I did talk to my doctor about it. And I didn't want to have any kind of like hemorrhoid yeah. surgery. Or
yeah,
anything,
yeah, yeah.
But it's just.
Everybody gets that, by the way. The hemorrhoids, they all happen. A lot of pregnant women. I don't know any pregnant woman who didn't get some hemorrhoids.
Well, I didn't. That was the funny thing is I had during the entire pregnancy, I mm-hmm. had no problems.
Oh, that's
I had
good.
No constipation. Everything was fantastic. I had a relatively, you know, knock on wood, easy pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
But postpartum, I think what it was is I was so focused on the baby, I wasn't thinking to take care of myself.
Yeah.
So, like, they gave me Colace in the hospital, and I was like, I don't need this. I've been fine. And then I get home, and about a week later, I'm, like, having another baby.
Oh, my God.
My rectum. And so.
Oh, my God. That's very vivid.
Yeah, sorry. So, so it's one of those things where it's, like, I belong to a group on Facebook of moms.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's talking about, you know, I have this behavioral issue that I'm dealing with, or she doesn't want to go to bed, but nobody's talking about like
physically what's happening
yes.
to them.
And it's tough too because a lot of moms maybe don't breastfeed that long, or mm-hmm. they have a C-section as opposed to vaginal birth. So there's things that even if they had a baby, which a lot of my friends haven't, I may not be able to relate to them on because we've had totally different experiences.
Right,
you're
right.
still in the mom club and you're still in the birthing, having had a baby club, but maybe you didn't. Somebody didn't have my specific experience.
The wide range of experiences with birth is such a wide range. I mean, everybody's experiences were super different. Like one of my other friends was like, oh, I had a C-section. I wasn't down for that long at all. Like maybe a week. And I was like, I was out for like 6 weeks. Yeah. Like I could barely like walk for weeks. And, you know, then when I found out, I was like, oh, my God, I have to go back to work soon. Like it's so horrible. I think it's because my friend Sarah Haley, who is a pre and postnatal fitness expert, mm-hmm. she says that because everybody's bodies are different before you get pregnant, then your experiences with your body during pregnancy and after pregnancy are all going to be different. So like a fitness routine, like if someone is really healthy and fit and they're in shape, they're probably going to have a healthy, fit pregnancy and bounce back more easily. That's why celebrities and supermodels, everyone looks like they just barely ate a burrito and now they're look great again.
And I've heard that some of them have secret surrogates and they just wear a pregnancy pad. So there's
there is that too. What was I listening to the other day? There was some show that was on that was like, nobody in Hollywood is. Oh, it was my show. I'm so stupid. It was my episode with Glozell, and she was talking about how everybody in Hollywood is using, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people use surrogates and they use the fake bumps and stuff. And that's how a week after they have their baby, it's like, oh, look, I'm magically size 2 again because they have to get back to work and there's so much pressure to make money and be this perfect mom.
I'm not a fan of lying, but I totally on another level don't blame them because the pressure, if your body is your commodity.
Yeah.
Like I see how much my body has changed through pregnancy. And I can't imagine if this was like the way I'm going to make money for the rest of my life, not just your body, but your talent and your face and your voice and whatever.
But it's mostly your body. I mean, let's be real. It's Hollywood. It is mostly your body and your face. Yeah. And if that gets jacked up and that's your moneymaker,
and you
like,
don't have a career. And that's what you know how to do. Yeah. So I don't totally blame them. It's weird. That's the kooky world, you know, that you have to exist in.
It is the world of Hollywood that we are in. Now, you're an actor too, though.
I was. Yeah. I don't consider myself an actor
now.
You
don't?
I did commercials for about, I guess, 10, 12 years and was actually really successful at it. I mean, I really enjoyed it and I booked stuff consistently. every year, and just loved it, completely loved it. And I had a mentor who always told me from the time I met him, he's like, you're not an actor, you're a writer. You need to stop acting. Like, you're not going to be fulfilled by this.
And I was were you like, what? How dare you?
Yeah, oh, I was totally heartbroken. And but it took me like 10 years to take the advice. And finally, one year, I had one of those things where it's like, I was driving away on vacation and my agent knew that I was going to be booked out and they called and said, oh, you have a callback, you know, in a couple of days. And I said, wait, I already went to a callback on that job. I was like, screw those guys. If they have, you know, 10 hours to book me until my phone, you know, is out of commission. And then of course, when I got back, you know, a week later, they were like, yeah, you booked the job. And it was just one of those things where it was like, things stop being fun.
Yeah. And they start being a pain in the ass, especially commercially. Yeah. I will say commercials are just a different beast, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, I saw a total evolution because when I started, I'm going to date myself now. When I started commercials, it was paper headshots. They were couriered over to the casting director. You know, it was a totally different. So there was about a 24-hour time frame from when the casting would go out, or maybe even 48 hours till you actually got the booking or till you got the audition. And, you know, it's evolved to where now you have your barcode and they expect. I would literally get calls at like 10 a.m. I would be in North Hollywood or wherever, and they would be like, oh, you have an audition in Santa Monica in 45 minutes, and they want you in a wedding dress with your hair curled. And
right.
I was like, what?
Yeah. And that happens so much here. It's like they're I don't understand how the world they're in is in such a hurry to cast a commercial that you have to give people just a couple hours notice to like get in full actor gear mode and like, God forbid anybody has a regular job. You never make it to auditions.
Well, yeah. And I don't mean to sound like sour grapes. I absolutely loved it while I did it. And I think that's why I finally decided to stop doing it, was because when I started, it was such an incredible adventure. You know, I was driving around in my crappy car. I would have like 5 auditions a day. I'd be changing my clothes in the car. Mm-hmm. I loved every single aspect and every moment of it. And then, you know, a few years ago when I finally stopped, it was the opposite. It was like, oh, I'm supposed to have lunch and go shopping and I got to go to this dumb audition.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, if I'm not enjoying it, I'm also not good at it, because it was like I wasn't booking as much because I wasn't having fun. You know, I wasn't coming in with that spirit of like joy and fun and, you know, whatever, which for me it always was. I always had a great time doing it. And so that was my cue of like, you know what, let me make a graceful exit.
Yeah. And now what are you doing? Are you writing?
No, I should. So acting was my identity, like completely from, you know, when I was in second grade and I got cast in the play that all the sixth graders were in, I thought, oh, this is what I want
to do. I've made it.
Yeah.
I'm a star, Mom.
But once I turned, you know, 16, 18, and I figured out, oh, people actually do this for a living, because I grew up here in L.A., I realized, like, you can do this. That's basically when I started working. And I got headshots. I was Miss Teen Burbank.
Oh, my God. That's so cute.
And one of the things I won, I think, was a set of headshots. And so that was probably my first set of headshots. I got the headshots, I started acting, and I just loved it. But so acting for me, you know, it was just always such a joy.
Until it wasn't, and then you kind of felt like it was time to move on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so now, basically what I wanted to focus on was being a mom. So it's funny, I've had this motherhood in Hollywood progression. So career-wise, I mean, I think what I'd like to do is spend, you know, until we'd like to have one more child. We have, you know, like I said, our baby's 4 months old. So in a year and a half, maybe, have another if we can. And then maybe when they're both sort of 5, 7, you know, heading into school.
Right.
I think that would be the time for me to think like, okay, they're kind of launched into school where at least they're going to have a few hours and I'll have a few hours. Mm-hmm. What's next?
Right.
Because I've never been career driven. You know, with acting, I thought if you don't want to be an actor, you're a loser. Like, acting is the goal. No, not
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
Like, everyone in the world should want
to
be an actor.
I know. I'm always surprised when I meet people who are like, no, I wanted to, you know, be a special effects designer. And I'm like, really? That's weird. Why wouldn't you want to be an actor? No, 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 no.
Well, now I can see that because, like, when I've been to New York, I have friends who are like, they're in finance.
Yeah.
You know, and same thing. Like, I went to Ireland with my husband's family a few years ago, and people went to college for economics.
For other things other than acting. Like, why would you do that?
I feel so gypped. I'm like, I grew up in LA. I was told to want to be an actor sort of by the culture. And I'm like, wow, what a waste. I
could have an education. No. I do sometimes, you know, look at our friends. We have a lot of mutual friends. I should also mention Olivia and I have known each other for a really long time. I forgot to say that part. I'll say it in the mommy monologue. But we have a lot of mutual friends. And I wonder, you know, a lot of them have theater degrees and they don't have degrees in anything else. And so it's like, if you don't do theater, what else do you do? Where else do you go? Well, and especially in LA.
And dude, at least they have degrees. I went to acting classes that were, you know, cost me what a college education would cost, but they weren't accredited. You know, they were like a 2-year program. You know,
did you go to like the Stella Adler School or something?
I think I did. I've been to every school in town, you know.
Did you like the Stella Adler School if you went there? Because I actually looked at it and I was like, oh, it's a 2-year conservatory program.
I think I audited that one. I don't know that I attended that one, but I've checked out every class now and attended several. I did mostly a lot of Meisner programs.
Oh God, I hate Meisner.
Oh, I loved it.
I'm one of the people, the one or two people in LA that doesn't like Meisner. I just am like, stop repeating to me.
Right.
Stop it.
No, I was the opposite. I completely took to it. It made perfect sense to me. But I also did Groundlings, which was really fun. And that was when I was like 18 years old. And so yeah, studying acting, but so at least they have degrees. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I'll say. So they could go teach or they could go to grad school and study something else or, you know, but yeah, it's pretty rough because, you know, I think Mike Rowe is talking about that a lot, that people need to focus on the jobs that are needed.
Right.
Because if a lot of people too, their theater degrees were very expensive.
Yeah.
I feel real sad for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's harsh to say, but like, that's rough.
There's a lot of people out here with theater degrees who don't have a backup plan.
Yeah.
If acting doesn't work out, what are they going to do?
Well, this is the big lie, though, of our culture and of acting, is they tell you not to have a backup plan. Like, your conservative parents might say, have a backup plan, but the culture says, no, follow your dreams.
Go for it.
If you have a backup plan, you're going to fail because you're going to fall back on that backup plan. And it tells you, you have to go for it, you know. And I think that's a little unrealistic.
It totally is unrealistic. I think, too, there's always the story, like every, you know, actor or a lot of actors have the story where I just quit acting and I was in my car and I was driving back home, like giving it up forever. And I got the call.
Right.
That's like Uzo Aduba has that story with Orange is the New Black. She was giving it up and was quitting the next day and they got the call for Orange is the New Black. And then the guy who played Sawyer on Lost, also same thing. I was in my car, packed up, and they called and said, you got this show called Lost.
The thing I think, though, is that those actors, their careers on some level probably were on the cusp of making it and they didn't realize it.
Right.
There's a lot of actors that get fooled because they're sitting around, haven't had an audition in 3 years.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm going to get that call. And
it's know.
From whom?
Right. You know? No, it's true. I think there is a lot of delusion.
Yeah.
For sure. My husband calls it the Peter Pan syndrome, where everybody is sort of like living in Never Never Land, waiting for that call, waiting for that big break. And it may never come. And you do have to like sort of wake up to reality and go, okay, now how can I start becoming a contributing member of society without totally giving up on your dreams? I mean, I don't mean to like be a huge bummer because I know there's a lot of actors listen to this like, fuck you, Heather. And I'm like, I don't mean to be like a huge bummer, but at some point reality does have to set in where you're like, hey, I'm 45 years old and I've never worked an acting job in my life.
Here's this is the wisdom in retrospect that I have to pass on. And this, I think, is the most important thing I learned of all my time of acting is you should treat it like you're going to be a doctor. And here's what I mean. Like if you are going to med school and then you do your residency, you're putting this much money into your education, which I know kind of contradicts what I was just saying about don't go to get an expensive theater degree, but invest in really great headshots. invest in a wardrobe, you know, whatever it is that you need to kind of get yourself in front of the casting directors, even those casting director workshops. I know people have mixed feelings about them.
I personally like them. I think they're great.
Whatever you can do to give yourself a leg up.
Yeah.
So what I would do is if people invested the amount of time and money that it takes to become a doctor, to becoming an actor, I think you'd be wildly successful. You know, go to the gym 2-3 hours a day or whatever you need to do. But most people, you know, work at a restaurant. They have a shitty agent. Mm-hmm. They have shitty headshots that are totally out of date. And then they're like, why am I not getting jobs?
Right.
So that's my like.
But it's advice. Also, that's such a great point. But it's also a catch 22, because if you're hustling at a restaurant, maybe you don't have the money to get good headshots or a great wardrobe that you need. Because I will say, if you notice, there's a lot of, like, especially now, a lot of young stars and starlets who seem to be rising to fame quickly, whether on social media or whatever. And it's generally because they're coming from privilege, a point of privilege, sure, where someone has given them the money to buy these fancy cars that they can post about, or go and get great equipment where they can make awesome videos and, you know, things like that. It's very, very rare to see, like, the homeless kid who, you know, just like got lucky. Like, I don't know. It sounds really snobby to say that, but it's very rare. 'Cause acting is not in general a lucrative profession unless you're at the top.
Well, and that's realistic, because there's also the Natalie Portmans or the Scarlett Johansons of the world who've been acting since they were 9,
right,
or younger.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so somebody like me who started at, you know, 18 or whatever, you're already at a little bit of a disadvantage resume-wise. Because
you haven't been...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know what? It is what it is.
It is what it is. And so really quickly, I don't know how quickly we'll talk about this, but I do want to talk to you, because one of my things I've been really enjoying over the last year is watching how passionate you are about politics. You are a big Bernie supporter.
Yeah, so the secret is I actually hate politics. I despise politics. But there's times when I feel like something is too important to sort of not get involved.
Right.
And Bernie was one of those things, because I swear in my heart for years I've been saying, oh my God, if Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren were to run for president, it would be my dream come true. Mm-hmm. Like, this would be. And when Bernie started running, I initially thought he was running as an independent. So I thought, oh, I'm not going to bother with that. But then somebody told me, like, no, he's running as a Democrat. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm on board. It's on. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, one of the first times, because I don't even, honestly, it's going to sound silly, I don't like watching the news. I find it incredibly depressing. Because,
same.
So I really try to stay out of the political realm, because I believe we have representative politics, you know, a representative government for a reason. We get to vote in the people we trust and then trust them to, you know, we should hold them accountable. But it's like, I don't want to read every bill. I don't want to, you know, I can't.
Right.
So when Bernie was running, I just was like, this is literally like a dream come true. I donated, you know, tons of money. I made it like practically like
you set up job. Like a not a phone bank, but a
we did tons of phone banks.
Yeah,
I had a small grassroots group in my neighborhood, and then I got involved with a larger grassroots group actually in this area. And so it was literally at times like a full-time or a part-time job, often like a full-time job, because again, to me, it was too important. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And obviously it didn't work out.
No,
sadly. And the entire country went, no, collectively. What is, as a Bernie supporter, what are your feelings now? Are you just sort of like, are you going back to like kind of tuning everything out where you're like, I just can't deal with politics anymore? Or are you seeing Trump's like tweets and all of this stuff, like the cabinet choices he's making? Like, what are your feelings on that?
Well, it's really funny, because all this time from the very beginning, I said Bernie is the president America needs. Trump is the president America deserves. Mm. And so it's like, this is where we have led ourselves.
Right.
You know, Trump is like the perfect culmination of this moment in America.
Yeah, of like opulence, excess of entitlement. Yeah, idiocracy. Like, all of it is just personified in this man. And don't tweet at me, people. If you're a Trump supporter, good for you.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, I don't want to get murdered.
No. But it's just hard to ignore some of the stupid shit he's doing. Well, look, so, and you're like, what is going on?
To answer your question more directly, so this is where I'm at personally is definitely a place of you know, being burnt out. And that's where I was.
Yeah,
because sort of
you were going so hard and like really, really campaigning.
Yeah. So, and now I have a baby. And it's like I needed a break from being so involved. But where I will say a lot of people I know and volunteered with are at, that I think is a really incredible place, is Bernie said, look, I'm not going to do this by myself. Even if I get elected, I can't succeed by myself. I need, you know, the country needs to decide what is right for the country. And you guys need to get involved, run for government at local levels. And what's really cool that I've seen is people are now that they've sort of woken up, they're getting involved in tons of ways. And so, for example, like there's this woman that Facebook recommended, you know, you should be friends. And normally those are all the people you don't want to be friends with.
Right, right.
There was this woman and I was like, oh, she looks really cool. And I saw she was a Bernie supporter. Her name's Heidi Harmon. She just ran for mayor of San Luis Obispo where she lives and won by 400 votes or less, something like that. Wow. And so what Bernie had said was once the primaries were over, he said, you guys need to all run for office. And I want to, tens of thousands of people, I want to say, signed up and answer the call, you know, to run for a school board or run for
something,
you know,
something. Yeah.
And so I feel like it always reminds me of that quote that says, you know, it's like integrity is like an old man planting trees under which shade he'll never sit. And that's how I think of Bernie. It's like he's not, you know, 40 years old. I don't know how much he's, I mean, he's super energetic and he seems like he's going to do fine for a while, maybe 2020. But I feel like he is sowing the seeds for the next couple generations by telling people, get involved in politics, change it from the ground up. And that's sort of what the Tea Party did. And that's what the Republicans and a lot of the people who have been sort of pulling the strings from behind the scenes have been dealing with the small local stuff. And that builds and builds.
And it builds and builds. And do you think we're going to continue then to see, are you going to run for office or anything like that? Were you so moved?
No, it's not my calling, I don't think. But, you know, it could be one of those things where, like, for example, you look at Aaron Sorkin, not that I'm Aaron Sorkin, but you wrote The West Wing.
Yeah.
And that was something that I think inspired a lot of people and it changed the way they, you know, were inspired about politics.
Right.
And then more recently, he wrote that Newsroom.
Newsroom.
You know, which inspired people about journalism to have journalistic integrity. And like Dan Rather's doing amazing things on Facebook. And so I think everybody has their way of being involved and their calling. And so I haven't found mine yet if I was to, you know, influence the culture. But if I were to guess, it would be something involved with, you know, I'd like to have a voice and I'd like that voice to be one of, you know, calm and reason and integrity and, you know, things like that.
Well, if you do run, I will vote for you.
Thank you.
I would totally vote for you. I'm sorry, I've got some kind of frog in my throat. I'm so excited to see all the things that are going to happen in your life because I think you could do something in politics. I don't know. We'll see. And also excited for baby number two. You heard it here first, guys.
Not yet. Not pregnant.
One of big announcements. Well, like I said, I'm so glad that you are so involved politically and that you're so happy being a mom. It's just the best, isn't it?
Oh, it is the best.
I'm also really glad that you guys won the raffle a year ago.
Yeah, me too.
I know. When I emailed Kit, I was like, hey, so do you want to come on the show? And he was like, oh. He's like, I don't think so. Let me talk to Olivia. But I'm actually really glad you did. And I'm so grateful for your generosity for that event and for helping me raise money for No Kid Hungry.
It's a pleasure.
I think it speaks to even more so who you are as a person.
Thank you.
You guys are so generous. And so, yeah, I could just go on and on, but I won't. I promise.
Well, thank you so much. This is so much fun. I've never been on a podcast and it's been a great time.
Good. I'm glad. Well, listen, you guys, I'm going to put information up on motherhoodinhollywood.com where you can find out more about Olivia and what she has next and maybe her official baby number two announcement. Or maybe we'll get her to run for an office. So maybe we'll see. Thanks so much for listening, you guys. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye. Balls.